Welcome to episode 17 of the 2017 Front Stretch Podcast. This week, I am joined by usual co-host Tom Bowles, along with longtime recurring guest Corey Brewer. And these gentlemen are here to help me break down an interesting weekend in Sonoma, along with a big weekend for the sport in Daytona. But before we get into all of that, I want to talk to you guys about DraftKings. As the NASCAR world is about to enter the NBC portion of the schedule in the Cup Series, still a lot of time to jump in on action with DraftKings, especially before the biggest race of the NBC portion of the summer schedule at Daytona. On DraftKings, the objective is simple. Pick six drivers, watch how they perform on Sundays, or Saturdays in this week's case. And if you pick correctly, you can be eligible for massive cash prizes. All you have to do to jump in on the action is to sign up to the DraftKings link on the Front Stretch Podcast article page. It makes a $5 deposit, and then you'll be eligible for a free entry into one of this weekend's contests for Daytona. Once again, DraftKings.com, where you choose, you play, and you win. Gentlemen, big weekend for the sport ahead. Got Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s last, or potentially last, race ever at Daytona. You got the start of NBC this week for the Cup Series and for the Xfinity Series. Got some stuff to break down as far as Sonoma, but I think the bigger story is really what's ahead, especially as we have like kind of a later week podcast here coming up. So I want to start with some Daytona talk. Corey, we have our fantasy expert on the podcast this week, so glad to have Corey on. So, gentlemen, as far as the Dale Earnhardt Jr. retirement tour is concerned, this to me feels like probably outside of Homestead, which is going to be Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s last race, this feels big to me. This feels like probably the first time since he announced his retirement where I'm like, okay, this is a big weekend as far as the junior kind of angle of the sport is concerned right now. I want to talk to you guys about what you kind of expect this weekend in Daytona. And what would a Dale Earnhardt Jr. win mean this weekend? I think, you know, everyone kind of agrees this is probably his best chance left to get into the playoffs A and probably to get a win on the season A. You know, I hate to be one of the millions of people who are just saying, hey, it's Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s last blank, but I think this is the first justified one. Corey, we'll start with you. What do you make of it?
I really do think this is Jr.'s last shot to win, and especially to get into the playoffs. We saw Tony Stewart do it and Jeff Gordon do it in their final seasons, you know, lock that spot into the playoffs and then take it, you know, as deep as they could. Jeff Gordon going to Homestead. Jr., in order to, you know, get his fans excited for, you know, Homestead, his final race, locking a spot in that playoff and being a contender for the championship would be a huge, huge boost ratings wise for the sport going through the season, and then just big for him as a personal, you know, his personal achievements.
Mr. Bowles?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I sometimes think these stories get exaggerated in the media. Oh, well, you know, this is the last best chance for Dale Jr. to come out on top. Well, it's not like he's only won two races in his entire career, right? And you also have Talladega coming up in the playoffs. But when you look at the regular season and you look at the 10 races left on the schedule, there's no question that Daytona is the one that sticks out. It's a racetrack where he's had a lot of success. It's a racetrack where he led his first laps in February since coming back from post-concussion syndrome. And when you look at Hendrick Motorsports as a whole right now, they are just, as a whole, Jimmy Johnson notwithstanding, seemingly that little tick behind some of the other top teams on intermediate tracks. And that really hurts Junior down the stretch. Plus, a lot of these tracks in the final 10 races of the regular season aren't really that favorable to him if you look at his career history. So absolutely, I think Daytona is a must-win situation for Dale Jr. And I'm going to throw something else out here, guys. I think when people think of Dale Jr. and think of the memories, who can forget the 2001 Pepsi 400, where Earnhardt Jr. comes in, what, 6 months after the death of his father, 5 months after the death of his father, and has a convincing win in the Pepsi 400. I think that people look at that and then they go, wow, there was a little bit of magic surrounding that weekend. So every time you come back to Daytona, you have that magic for Earnhardt, and it's a time that he needs a little bit of magic again after the year that he's had. And I think that's just added to the intrigue a little bit.
Yeah, I think there's a good deal of intrigue heading into this weekend. I will actually be at the race this weekend. It's my local track, I guess you could say. I'm excited to see what the crowd is like and what the energy is like in the building, so to speak. I know it's not a building, but you get my point. That Saturday night. I think this has the potential, if Dale Earnhardt Jr. were to win this race, to be a seminal weekend for the sport. I mean, you know, an Earnhardt's last ride at Daytona is pretty, it's a pretty big deal. Because you have to remember, back at Daytona in February, we didn't know that this was going to be Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s last season. On the flip side of this, Earnhardt has actually come out this week and said that he would consider running Daytona 500s in the future. Do you guys buy that? Sell that? Do you believe it's realistic? Do you think he would actually go through with that? Do you think it's smart of him to be doing that, considering, you know, health was a reason that he retired? What do you guys make of that revelation this week?
You know, I believe it could happen for sure if the sponsorship is there, which I'm sure it would be because he's an Earnhardt, but also a team has that empty car, an extra car to give him a spot, because Hendrick, it will probably fill that 88 seat, and they can't have a fifth car run, so he'll need to either bring up maybe a junior racing car up for just a couple races, or I think it's more realistic we see him in an Xfinity Daytona race than we do in a Cup race.
Really, you think so?
Yeah, because he runs his own team in Xfinity. He's got the car. I think we could see him run some Xfinity races after retirement from Cup. Nothing, not like a full schedule or anything, but the big Daytona, possibly Talladega or something like that.
I'd also agree with Corey on that. I think that it's much more likely that he's going to run the plate races in Xfinity than he does in Cup. And I think a lot of it has to do with what cars are available and what the rules are. I look at the Indy 500, and one of the reasons why the Indy 500 has struggled to attract so many different qualifiers is the amount of money that it takes to put a car on the racetrack, even for just that one big race. And I know plate race equals parity when it comes to the Daytona 500, but still, there's a lot of money involved, and it's really expensive to put a team on the racetrack. Just this week on the entry list, one of the reasons why there's only 40 cars is you even put 41 cars out there and five guys qualifying for four spots. Those guys that don't have locked in spots in the field have to change their setup so radically. Number one, they end up losing so many laps in the race just trying to move over to a race setup. So their chance for the race win is already shot before the green flag even drops. And number two, it's a non-guaranteed spot. And in this NASCAR economy, you cannot afford to fail to qualify. And so I think it's whether a spot is available with not only a team that could potentially run an extra car or a team that has an established car that would love to have Dale Jr. in it. And I don't think Earnhardt would do the type of deal that Michael Waltrip did in February, where he ran with Premium Motorsports, a lower tier team, and then somehow scraped out a top 10 finish in his final start. It's the Earnhardt name. You're going to want a top tier team, and it's uncertain whether those rides are going to be available.
You know, I guess my perspective on it is, like, you know, if you're a retired driver, you know, why would, and I'm not saying it'd be a waste of time, but, you know, why would you, if we're accepting the premise that restrictor plate racing is dangerous, you know, why would you risk, you know, going into an Xfinity race that doesn't really carry the prestige of a race at, you know, a Cup race at Daytona or Talladega? I kind of took his comments to mean that, you know, he might do a marquee Cup race one-off here and there, you know, for the prestige of it. And given that he's a good shoe at Daytona, doesn't hurt as well. But I think that'd be great. I think it'd be great to see part-time drivers from other series or retired drivers that kind of still got it, Earnhardt, Gordon, whatever, come back and run the big races like Daytona and Indy and Darlington and Bristol and that sort of thing. I think that's something that's kind of missing from the sport. I'd really like to see that. So when he said that this week, I thought that was pretty cool. I want to talk about the race itself this weekend. Corey, as our fantasy expert in this segment, obviously presented by our friends at DraftKings, where does Daytona rank right now in terms of the ability to prognosticate from a daily fantasy perspective, because I don't necessarily know if the answer is as straightforward as some might think, that it's necessarily, you know, extremely unpredictable. What is your fantasy outlook right now for this weekend?
Daytona is, as we saw in the Daytona 500 with the wreck fest that it was, really anyone that enters on DraftKings has a shot of winning. It's complete randomness. You have guys like Michael Waltrip, who finished in the top 10. Somebody who doesn't know the sport as much is dabbling in DraftKings for the first time, slots Michael Waltrip in as just because of name recognition, now goes home with money, and they're in it, you know, for the rest of the year. Because once you win, you want to come back. But Daytona is much different than any other track when it comes to setting a lineup points-wise. You want to get guys who start in the back and work the way forward, because leading laps at Daytona is a very, very hard thing to do. We saw Kurt Busch win only leading one lap. Saw Blaney, Larson, Truex all lead laps, but then fall back. Finishes weren't as good, thus getting lower point total. So it's really a focus that comes after qualifying mostly. But, you know, this is a anybody can win money kind of weekend.
From a racing perspective, Tom, you can jump in here. What do you guys expect this weekend? You know, it seems like the two restrictor plate races this season, you know, with stage racing included, the vibe seems to be that those were two of the most well-received races of the season. I thought they were probably the two most exciting races of the season so far. I was at Daytona 500. Talladega was just a very memorable race this year. Tom, we'll start with you. What's your kind of outlook for the Coke Zero 400?
Well, as I wrote in my column this week, and did you notice on Wednesday, you look at the 500 from February, it's fascinating. Only three of the top 10 finishers in the Daytona 500 this year would qualify for the playoffs if the season ended today. Just three. And one of those, Joey Logano, is hanging on by a thread after the whole Richmond situation where the win was labeled encumbered, and the team has really struggled ever since. So you had guys, check out this list of people that finished in the top 10 in the Daytona 500. Matt DiBenedetto hasn't so much as sniffed a top 10 since. You know, Michael Waltrip retired after that race, finished eighth. Paul Menard finishing in fifth. That's his season best finish. You had Eric Almirola, who obviously won't be running this race, but he was fourth. And that shows how good the 43 car can be with Bubba Wallace, who's auditioning for a job and potentially his NASCAR career. And then you had A.J. Allmendinger finish in third place in the 500, a career best for him. And after what happened at Sonoma, it's becoming clear that Daytona might be his only path to the NASCAR playoffs and, you know, a potential spot in the field. So I feel like Daytona is more wide open than ever. I feel like there are a lot of teams that typically would run 20th to 30th on a race weekend that will enter this race with a really good shot to win. And I think that's what's going to make the racing so exciting. And it's going to make fans treat this as a must-see event. I know you talk about television ratings all the time, Matt. We have had a very difficult year as far as that goes, but I would be extremely surprised if we experienced a decline in the Daytona race this weekend. The amount of storylines that we have going in are probably more than any race we've had this year other than the 500.
Yeah, I'm very excited. That's a good segue, actually, from a television perspective. You know, looking at what NBC can bring to the table that maybe Fox was not able to. Fox kind of struggled this year. And Fox has actually, you know, kind of struggled across sports, even into their primetime television slate. They've kind of been the weakest broadcast network over the past year or so. They've just struggled in terms of ratings. It'll be interesting to see if NBC could bring some flavor. It's year three for them. You know, this is kind of I didn't say make or break year or anything like that. I mean, they have the contract for their 7 years. But I think it's a crucial year for NBC in the eyes of fans, because now people kind of know what to expect with NBC, and this is typically the year where a new broadcast partner will kind of get those bugs worked out. And not that there were many bugs to begin with. I think NBC's had a great broadcast the last couple of seasons since entering the sport again in 2015. It'll be interesting to see if there's any new wrinkles that they can bring, if it's just a tighter broadcast. Are you guys looking forward to the return of NBC? And do you agree with the notion that this is kind of a big year for those folks?
I'm looking forward to NBC because they've had almost a half a season to watch Fox and kind of learn from their mistakes and also pick up on the positives that Fox does. So they can really come in with those kinks worked out more than Fox can going into a brand new season. So I'm excited to see what they kind of take from the Fox presentation and build into their own presentation and see what they can go farther.
I also am looking forward to NBC, and I think that the three-man booth of Rick Allen, Jeff Burton, and Steve Letarte has really started to come into its own. I think they started off really strong in year one, but where they are in year three, you talk about Fox and NBC, really reminds me of where Mike Joy, Larry McReynolds, and Darryl Waltrip were, where they were starting to reach their peak as a broadcast team. And remember, the peak of NASCAR's ratings came in 2005, the fifth year of the Fox deal. And we're on year three of this NBC deal where they have everything retooled from it, when they had the NASCAR contract the first time. So I really feel like the booth is going to be strong. And I think that the biggest criticism of the Fox broadcast this season was too much DW and a lot of focus on the front of the field, not enough coverage on all the cars running in the race. And NBC has shown in the last 2 years they've done a much better job than Fox with that. And I think the stage racing really plays to their strengths, because with stage racing, you're not just looking at the guy that's leading the race. You're looking at everybody in the top 10 because everybody's fighting for their bonus points. And people are setting up all sorts of different strategies in stage one and stage two to help them over the long run of the race. We saw that at Sonoma this past weekend. So I feel like that plays into the strength of the pit reporters, which is another strength of NBC, and the strength of the production crew to see the big picture and not focus on just the front of the field.
That's a good point. I would certainly agree with that. I personally am looking forward to NBC. I think they have I wouldn't say it's better than ESPN, which I thought was the best overall kind of broadcast over the past 10 years or so. I thought right at the end, ESPN had a really strong product. But I think it'll be good to bring some fresh voices back into the sport. I think it's good that they start in Daytona. And I'm very curious to kind of see how the new playoff system works, with NBC at the helm. And I'm very just intrigued by the second half of this season, and it's cool that NBC kind of picks up where it does now, and the schedule is really kind of a clean half and half. An interesting debate that I've had is, if you guys were to see another broadcaster come into the sport, let's say that it's a hypothetical scenario where let's say we fast forward, it's year 10 of this contract, the contract's back up. Who would you guys like to see cover this sport, take a stab at this sport? Tom was talking about, how maybe Fox got a little stale. What would be your dream broadcast, outlet, and then, voices behind, the name, especially when you got guys like Dale Jr. who's possibly going to be into the broadcast, career for maybe another 10 years after this. What would be your dream scenario for a NASCAR broadcasting, situation? It's something we don't really cover on this podcast. I'm curious to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I think when you talk about that, I think you have to recognize that it's not just the network that's behind a broadcast, but it's the people. And people forget that one of the big losses that we've had in the last decade of NASCAR production was Neil Goldberg. Neil Goldberg was the producer for the Fox broadcasts from 2001 to 2006, when they were reaching their peak and the ratings for the Fox races were so much higher than what NBC was putting out. And Neil Goldberg was with ESPN throughout the 1990s, and he and director Mike Wells built this fantastic product that was Emmy Award winning and really got fans involved in the sport. So I would love to see, and of course we'll never see it, Neil was unceremoniously removed after a whole Peeping Tom incident that we won't get into.
Oh my God.
But it'd be great to have Neil Goldberg back behind in production, somewhere either for the NBC broadcast, for the Fox broadcast. He really was one of the best producers in my 11 years working television in any sport. One of the best producers, if not the best producer I've seen in action. Just being able to think ahead and to really understand everything that was going on at the racetrack at any given time. So for me, it's adding the right people. I actually think that Dale Jr. good add to the booth because I think he connects with people and I think he gets social media. And I think there's an opening for NASCAR and in any sport right now to figure out a way to connect social media to the broadcast that you're seeing on TV. I think it doesn't happen enough. And I think the generation coming up behind me, the generation that's going to come up after the millennials, is going to be completely social media plugged in. And if they're not feeling like they're a part of the broadcast, it doesn't matter how much they like the sport, they're going to be too busy playing with their phone. And there has to be a way to break that barrier and get people to look up from their phone and the Twitter feed and see that they're a part of the broadcast and an active part of the broadcast. And I think that's going to be the challenge, not just for NASCAR, but for all sports in the next 10, 15 years.
Tom brings up a good point with the social media. Twitter themselves have been experimenting with different sports broadcasting events on Twitter themselves. I'd love to see NASCAR get into that. If you want to reach a younger fan base, put it on Twitter. So when you're scrolling down your Twitter feed, you see the NASCAR broadcast live as it's happening. You say, oh, I've got to tune into this. And then you get, I mean, you put Junior on there, a recognizable name alongside, you know, an established play-by-play fella. And I really think that's a great way to reach a new audience.
That's interesting to me. You know, with a couple – you got a couple guys coming up now. You have Junior. Gordon's obviously new to the broadcasting game. Dale Earnhardt Jr. has basically hired an agency that's going to be placing him somewhere next year in a broadcasting role. Where do you guys see him ending up?
I would say Fox if I had to put money down, but I'm not 100% sure. Certainly there was no fanfare surrounding the wall trips on Sunday, no indication that there were going to be any changes there. But I feel like there was no indication when Larry McReynolds got moved out of the booth or when Jeff Hammond quietly was given a minimal role and then ushered out of the Fox weekend activities. So I think there's still a long way to go there, and a lot of it is going to be up to Earnhardt. I mean, he is the most sought-after name that we've seen perhaps ever for a spot in a NASCAR broadcasting booth. And what he'll bring to the table in terms of potentially retaining fans and the knowledge that he has is going to be incredibly valuable. So I would go with Fox, but I really think it's going to be Junior's call. And I think that there's a percentage, Corey, out there that he may not do broadcasting at all. He may turn around at the end of the year and go, you know what? I'm starting a family. I want to take a year off, 2 years off, and just not go into broadcasting right away. I think everybody's assuming that it's going to happen because they're throwing money at him. And I'm not 100% sure it's going to.
Yeah, Junior's always kind of been a guy who doesn't – he was thrust into the spotlight because of his last name. And he's kind of been a guy who's over the years kind of come out of his shell. But for the most part, he's a pretty private fella when it comes to work. So I could definitely see him, like Tom said, taking a couple years off and getting out of the spotlight, starting a family, just working on his Xfinity team. And maybe eventually coming back, but we could also see him go along the Carl Edwards route where he's done and out of the limelight for a few years.
Very interesting. Well, kind of wrapping up Fox's last broadcast last week, we were in Sonoma. You know, typically we start, but with last week's race, but I think given, you know, some of the storylines of this week, it was important to kind of kick off with Daytona, but I do want to flash back to Sonoma last week. Kind of an uneventful race, I think, towards the end, but, you know, with road course racing, you know, definitely being in vogue, it seemed like, you know, the race was well received. What were your guys' biggest takeaways from last weekend's race, and then kind of heading into this week? Tom, we'll start with you.
Well, I definitely think, first of all, it was really important for Kevin Harvick and Stewart Haas Racing to get off the schneid. I think that SHR has been a forgotten man. They are in their first year with Ford, and Penske has really shined this season between Ryan Blaney and Keselowski and Logano before he got his big penalty at Richmond, you know, which obviously has changed their season quite a bit. But SHR has really been shuffled out for a little while. And when you look at the past couple of years, what we've seen is the team that's hottest at the beginning of the season doesn't necessarily get the big trophy at the end. Like, look 2 years ago. with Hendrick Motorsports. They were red hot to start the year. I think they won seven out of the first 13 races with their chassis. And in the end, it was Joe Gibbs Racing and Kyle Busch that takes home the trophy, right? Then last year, Joe Gibbs Racing starts out really hot, wins seven of the first 13 races. And then who ends up the champion? Well, it's Jimmy Johnson. So you just never know what's going to happen. And I think that SHR reestablished themselves at Sonoma. I think that not only did Kevin Harvick have a really smart race, and Rodney Childers did great strategy on top of the pit box. They were really on top of everything. But Clint Bowyer gets punted around, gets spun out, gets involved in multiple wrecks, and then takes a beat-up, banged-up car to finish second. And that put him in position right now for the final playoff spot. And there's a good shot that he could end up as a third car in the field for SHR. I mean, obviously, I don't think Danica's going to make it. I think that's an interesting storyline, Corey, because you look at SHR and their championship history. Harvick just won a couple years ago. I think that as they progress with Ford and they get more comfortable throughout the year, they're going to be in their best shape heading into the playoffs.
Ford is definitely a big talking point coming up this weekend at Daytona for sure as well, with their dominance in the 500. But Stuart Haas Racing, I think this definitely, like you said, puts them over that hump going into the last stretch of the season. They didn't have a really good intermediate track package going, and I think that really hurts them because that's a bulk of the schedule. But plate tracks and I guess now road courses, they seem to have it dialed in. Danica even put up an impressive run in the wrong spot at the wrong times throughout the race. But those are four cars they could have had in the top 10 throughout the day.
You know, I think it's interesting. I'm looking right now at the standings, and I'm just seeing so much parity in the sport this year. It really is incredible. And other than, you know, the 78 team, which I think definitely seems to have the most speed, but they really haven't been putting races together. I can't really give you who my championship pick is right now. I don't think it would be intelligent to pick anybody. I think it's impossible to say. Ganassi's been strong. Furniture Row's been really strong. Joe Gibbs Racing has come on recently. Stuart Haas has shown flashes of brilliance. Penske's been strong. The Wood Brothers have been strong. Hendrick's had its moments. And we saw last year, you know, Hendrick was out to lunch for, you know, 90% of the season, and then came on strong in the last 10 races and won the championship. So I'm so excited for the playoffs this year. I genuinely think it's going to be wide open. I think that segues really nicely into this weekend. I think it's going to be a lot of parity. You know, I think we saw Ford really dominated Daytona and Talladega, but those races were very competitive, and really all the manufacturers were right in the game. And what's kind of forgotten about the Daytona 500 this year is that it was not a Ford. As much as the Fords on the balance of manufacturers were the strongest, the best car in Daytona, I think, and perhaps really the best driver that day, I think, was Chase Elliott. That's another story, I think, that's interesting heading into this weekend. Chase drove one of the – I think was his best race he's ever driven was the Daytona 500 this year. I was at that race. I watched every move he made. It was incredible to watch him in that race. That car that he was driving was incredible. Chase was on it. Chase is a really good restrictor plate racer. And I think Chase could get his first win this weekend. And I think that would be kind of a fitting time for him to win the race. You know, it's going to be one of the more watched races of the year. I think he's, you know, young, up-and-coming driver in the sport. Important for the sport's kind of future success. It'd be a good weekend for him to win. As far as his Q score goes, he's somebody I think a lot of people are forgetting about. So, you know, I think we can kind of end on this topic. What do you guys expect in terms of results this weekend? You know, who do you think is carrying the right momentum, and then who do you think comes away with the checkered flag once all is said and done after 160 laps?
You know, I definitely think, like I said, it's going to be one of the more wide open races of the season. And I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see who shuffles out. I could name one of 20, 25 guys to win this weekend, and it really wouldn't surprise me. And I know sometimes we say that to drum up excitement and play race parity. No, 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 no. Like, this weekend, really, 20 to 25 guys could win, and none of them would surprise me. I am going to go and say Dale Jr. gets it done, and that he does have that whole miracle storybook ending at Daytona. But I definitely think that there are a couple guys to watch that people aren't paying attention to. And one of those guys that I'm going to mention, who I said briefly very early in the podcast, keep an eye on Bubba Wallace. Maybe not for the win, but Bubba does not have much time. He's got Daytona, he's got Kentucky, and then Eric Almirola may be back by Loudon. And I have not heard whether or not Richard Petty Motorsports is going to run a second team. But based on his results so far, he certainly doesn't have any sponsors whetting their appetites. It's not like Bubba's been running in the top 10 or anything like that. So he needs a race in on a big stage to prove himself and perhaps save his NASCAR career. And this 43 team with Almirola has won Daytona before. So don't put it past Bubba, even though he's only got a handful of starts, to be up there and pull like a surprising top three finish. I also think Chase Elliott is someone that, needs to be paid attention to. And also Matt Kenseth. Matt Kenseth is not a name that excites a lot of people, but it's a name that's quietly been running better. Joe Gibbs Racing still doesn't have a win. And Kenseth has been really strong in plate racing the last couple of years. And sneaky, sneaky, I feel like he's the best two-time Daytona 500 winner that never gets mentioned. So those are some names that I'm looking at. Corey, how about you?
I think that Chase and Dale are going to be the sexy picks. But when it comes down to it, the Penske guys run really well together. If they can lock up and run up towards the front, add Blaney into that mix, I think any one of those three could definitely, definitely win the race. And then also Larson and even McMurray. I think McMurray is a dark horse for this race. He's been running really consistent, really well all year. When he gets on the plate tracks, it's a little dangerous. He seems to like to wreck everybody. But if he can keep it clean, he's fast, fast in space. So I think really those five guys are my favorites to look at this week.
I think in a lot of ways it really just depends on how the race plays out, you know. I think one key thing to watch is that you're probably going to see a lot more side-by-side racing just because the way this package seems to work is that cooler temperatures seem to foster a little bit more passing. I remember in the Daytona 500 this year, it was a lot of passing late in the race when it was cooler out and, you know, when the sun was hot. That's when you kind of saw the field string out a little bit. So I think that's important to watch, you know, which teams are better in a pure speed, pure grip situation like that. That would seem to benefit the Hendrick cars, because as we saw in this year's Gatorade or Can-Am Duels, the Hendrick cars really dominated in under the lights. Junior and race two, and Chase Elliott ended up winning race one. Junior was passed late in the race. Did he win? Who won that second Can-Am Duel this year, guys?
No.
Was not Earnhardt, I can tell you that.
I know, I wasn't Dale.
Chase won one. And
Chase
won
the first one. It is a good little bit of bad radio right now. I love it.
I don't remember. I don't know.
Yeah, now you're making me look this up on the radio. Keep talking, and I'll get it for us. But, like, yeah, I mean, I just think that you know, look, Corey is right. Junior's going to be a sexy pick, right? And he's going to be a sexy pick based on past history. He's going to be a sexy pick because of, you know, the implications of the rest of the regular season. This really looks like his best chance. But there really are a lot of people that could win. And, you know, I look, you know, just as interesting, one of the rookies, somebody like an Eric Jones that really didn't run well at Daytona, you know, the first time around, but is coming in with a lot of momentum based on how he's grown with Furniture Row Racing. You know, that's a name. A Daniel Suarez, who also struggled at Daytona. The rookies now look like they're in really good shape, you know. Denny Hamlin won the Gatorade, the second duel. That's who you were thinking of, Matt. So okay. I think that, and Hamlin's another name that we often forget about when it comes to plate racing. 2016 Daytona 500 winner. And again, Joe Gibbs Racing doesn't have a win this season. So there's a lot of names on this list that could do well. And that's why I think a lot of people are so excited about this weekend, because there is going to be just a lot of pressure and intensity that's going to translate onto the racetrack in solid racing for pretty much every one of those 160 laps.
Well, guys, I have some good news to share. Florida weather expert Matt Stalnick here. Looks like we do have a little bit of rain that's going to be coming through before the race. But after 7 o'clock, we are clear. Only an 18% chance of showers that night. So
nice.
Should be getting that race in. So hopefully, you know, the way Florida works, it's weather is quite unpredictable down here. But hope to get that race in this Saturday, just so everyone knows. Coverage starts 7:30 on NBC at Daytona. Should be a fun one to watch. Gentlemen, give me your picks for this weekend, your picks to win the race, and then your 10 seconds to do whatever you want. Tom, we'll start with you.
Well, I've already talked about Dale Jr. winning the race, so I'll translate into my 10 seconds for this week. So, mentioned her a couple of times on the podcast and, had a few riffs about her, but can Danica Patrick's luck seriously get any worse? People are talking about her attitude in the wake of Eric Almirola's wreck in Kansas, and then how she spurned that fan for an autograph and fought back at Pocono was really emotional. This woman has been wrecked or been involved in wrecks 7 times in the first 16 races this season. The only person that has more DNFs on the circuit is Jeffrey Earnhardt, with a team that barely can finish the races with the jalopy that he's driving. And if you look at all of the wrecks, all but one really have nothing to do with Danica. You know, take Sonoma. She had a top 5 car, top 10 car that really could have done well throughout the entire race. You have Junior spin out and spin up right in front of her. You have a 3-abreast situation that she wasn't really the one that sparked it. Go wrong, and she's the one that ends up with damage, along with her boyfriend, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. And how many wrecks did we see at Sonoma? Hardly any. There were only 5 total cautions, and the third stage runs caution-free. So she never really had a great opportunity to truly fix the damage to a point where she could get back to top 5, top 10 status. And we've seen this so often with Danica throughout the season. So I think that when people talk about Danica's future, whether she's going to retire or not, and whether she should still be racing in NASCAR, certainly people have a lot of valid points, but I don't think it can be understated just how bad Danica's luck has been this year. And it's one of those things where we haven't seen this type of rough luck hitting one driver in particular in a while. She really just has a black cat or something that she walked past, or, picked up a penny, tails down. I don't know what's going on, but Danica's luck is just down the toilet.
My pick, I'm going to go with Joey Logano. Good, strong driver at Daytona. He's had a great 3-race streak, top 10s. So I think Logano will pull it out. And as for my finishing comments here, I just, with NBC coming back in with the broadcast, I'm looking forward to Rutledge Wood. The guy is a gift to NASCAR and to the NASCAR broadcast, whether it be with his crazy suits. He's got a great attitude. He really gets the casual fan engaged, and I think Rutledge Wood does not get enough credit.
Interesting. I haven't heard that take on Rutledge Wood. My pick to win this weekend, this is tough. This is one of the toughest picks of the year. I'm actually going to go with Ryan Blaney. I was in Daytona earlier this year. I got to see Blaney do some serious work on those plate at Daytona earlier this year. I think he was every bit as strong as Chase was in the 500. And then in Talladega, same thing. And I think what he had on him then that he doesn't have on him now is pressure. And I think this is probably his best chance to win, until we get into the playoffs. And I could absolutely see Blaney taking a popular win in Daytona this weekend. And then, just for my final thoughts, I get this feeling that we've got a classic ahead of us this weekend. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm excited. I think that this is easily one of the best weekends of the year for the sport. It's fun. It's restrictor plate racing under the lights. You really can't get any better than that. So if you know anybody that has never watched a NASCAR race before, tell them that this is a good weekend to tune in Saturday night on NBC. You're not going to want to miss it. That's all for us this week, folks. Please tune in next week ahead of Kentucky. We'll recap everything from Daytona as well as everything heading into Kentucky. Interesting racetrack, actually, in Kentucky. Year 2 on a new surface. That'll be a lot of fun. So we'll catch you guys then. Signing off, Make sure to follow all of us on social media. Follow us at @BrewerIPA and then at NASCAR Bowls, as well as at MStallman41. And we'll catch you next week. Thanks, guys.